Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, welcome to one more live edition of Politics Done Right on Coffee Party USA. Thank you very much for spending this 1 hour with me. My name is Egberto Willis, your host. How art thou doing? How are you all doing this weekend? It's Saturday, and what are we talking about, folks? It is all about middle-class economics. Middle-class economics. What exactly does that mean? What does it mean? It seems like the president is on a tear. He is out there pushing this. Many are asking, why didn't he do this before? Well, I can give several reasons why he couldn't do it before. Maybe some would be believing that, oh, you're just making an excuse for the president. But anyone who actually knows me knows that I really don't give the president or anyone a break. I shoot straight, but I shoot pragmatically, which means there are times I am, in fact, willing to give the benefit of the doubt. There are times, of course, I am willing to say, well, you know what? Just maybe there is a reason not said why things are done the way things are done. Folks, this is a call-in show. Please give us a call at 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. And press 1 if you want to talk. And I hope you do want to talk because I much prefer a conversation. Now, let me tell you, the repertoire in my brain on political narratives is huge. So I can talk on and on and on and on about politics, but I really have very little interest in it being a constant and continuous monologue. I much prefer interacting with folks. I much prefer dialogue. I much prefer being able to see different points of views and be able to talk, understand, listen, give the opportunity for me to change my mind, give the opportunity for you to change your mind. That is what this type of community is all about. That is what this type of radio is all about. That is what radio or communication or media should be all about. So again, folks, that number is 646-929-2495. Do remember as well that you can reach me on Twitter at Egberto Willis, at EGBERTOWILLIES, hashtag politics done right, hashtag politics done right on the Twitter code at Egberto Willis. Please also remember, visit our Coffee Party USA site, become a member. It's our 5-year anniversary. Why not? Movement going. We've been doing a whole lot. Later on, I hope some of the folks from D.C. will call in and tell us a little bit about their experiences and what occurred in D.C. as they marched to start informing folks, letting folks know about Citizens United, 5-year anniversary, I believe it is, Citizens United, that particular Supreme Court decision that pretty much allowed unfettered access to our politics by the rich, whatever they want to provide. Of course, there are other McCutcheon and other subsequent bills that did the same thing. So, folks, again, that telephone number is 646-929-2495. There are two blogs pretty much that I wanted to get into, but beforehand, I'd like to say the following. You know, the president has been on a tear lately. He is talking about what likely he would like his ultimate legacy to be: middle class economics. What exactly is middle class economics? Middle class economics is rather simple. It is based on simple mathematics. It is based on fairness. It is based on creating a society where all have their basic needs met. It is equal access to success for everyone. Equal access to success for everyone. Not a giveaway, but again, equal access to success. That is something that we don't have now. This week, tomorrow at 6:30 Central Standard Time, I have a pretty long article that is going to be dropped on at Daily Coast, where I think I titled it something to the effect of "Who are the real takers, or who are the people that are most dependent?" I don't remember the title that I gave it yet, or I don't know if the master editors there have changed it or not. Who knows? But the gist of that article was that we have a tendency to believe that the wealthy, the rich, those with money, or that class of people that really are the ones that control things, that really are the ones that know things, that really are the ones that are providing. What I did in that article, I hope, it's a fairly long article. Normally, I write articles on the order of 600 to 650 pages, 600 to 650 words, which is what's the standard normal article that you would see in, you know, the opinion pieces at New York Times or whatever. But this one, I kind of got right into it, and it turned out being, I think, something like 1,300 words. But I hope it got the message across in the tone that I was attempting to get the message across. I won't be covering that today, but I likely will repost after tomorrow or sometime in the week, after it had its views at dailycoast.com. I think I had some references in there to the coffee party and the media, if I recall. I don't remember if that one made the cut or not, but rather important article. So again, the middle class, what are your thoughts? What do you think? What do we need to do? Where are we going? Well, you know, the president, he was out there. I mean, President Obama continues in his form as he gave a compelling defense of his successful implementation of middle-class economics. He gave the speech at the White House retreat in Philadelphia. He said, "Middle-class economics works," President Obama said. "Middle-class economics works. That has been the history of this country. That has been the history of the last 6 years, when we've economics and the other side was telling us it would be a disaster and it would kill jobs and raise the deficit. Healthcare costs would explode." But you know what? None of that happened. So said the president. The president's next statement is one every Democrat should have used in 2014, and likewise, I bet they're going to use in 2016. And here is his that comment. "It is pretty rare where you have two visions, a vigorous debate, and then you test who is right," President Obama said. "And the record shows that we were right, and middle-class economics does work. Bottom line is this. We got to make sure it continues to work. We should protect the progress we are making." Now, that statement is, I mean, you know, a lot of people complain about when he says, "Oh, I was right," or whatever. Unfortunately, or fortunately, the numbers speak volumes. All the numbers say the same. However, there's a cancer that needs to be catered. And some of that I covered in that Daily Coast article. But the president then commented that he has lost count of the number of times Republicans have attempted to repeal the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. He assured the audience that any attempts to repeal Obamacare or any other policies that protect the middle class will be vetoed. The president then chided Republicans for their newfound concern for the poor and the middle class. One good piece of news, President Obama said, I noticed that even though the policies haven't caught up, their rhetoric is starting to sound pretty Democratic. The president said Chris Van Hollen told him that an unnamed Republican senator was shocked. He was shocked that the top 1% was doing fine as the middle class got squeezed. He was shocked. Doesn't he watch the news? Didn't we have a whole 99% movement? Wasn't the Wall Street movement about the 99% versus the 1%? Not versus, really, because it's not a fight. Wasn't it the 99% begging for what? Where was this dude? Where was he? When we talk about the bubble, he's in the bubble. I mean, it's amazing because the ex-governor of, or the former governor of Arkansas, Huckabee, wrote a book talking about the bubbles on the coast, meaning California, Washington, Oregon, New York, the East Coast, minus the southern part of the East Coast, somehow lives in a bubble. It was kind of amusing because John Stewart gave him a hard time and showed that the bubble that he speaketh about was pretty hypocritical, because the same things that are happening on the coast pretty much happen in the middle of the country, in the red part of the country. So there's this false narrative that we are so different. Hey, I'm a Southerner. I live in the South. We're not all that different. Even my red conservative friends, they're closer to me than they are to the politicians out there in Washington. Their values are much closer to mine. A lot of times they don't know it because they're colored by the rhetoric. But you get below that rhetoric. You get below the rhetoric and you look at the needs of people. You look at the things that they really care about. You look at the things that they want. Hell, generally turns out that for middle class folks, it's all the darn same. When Van Hollen talks about the middle class got squeezed and this guy didn't realize it. Anyway, continuing, the president then welcomed Mitt Romney's newfound concern for the poor and middle class. That is great, said the president. Let's go, said the president. Come on, let's do something about it. I'm glad that their rhetoric at least has shifted. But let's now make sure that the policies match up with the rhetoric. So said the president. Let me tell you something, folks. The president can't do that. The president can't somehow make the GOP, the rhetoric of the GOP, somehow match their deeds. Only you can do that. You all failed. We all failed in 2014 to put folks in office that really care about the middle class. When I say we failed, we didn't fail by voting for the wrong folks. We failed by not voting. Republicans, Democrats, independents, the ones that really know stuff is wrong, you didn't vote. But many then complain. But you didn't vote. all in the numbers. We have a Congress that does not represent the will of the people, and we have a people that are currently feeling impotent, and they're only feeling impotent because, and folks, I hate to say it this way, but it's because of our own doing, because of your own doing, our doing. That is why that we're in. Not Obama, not Boehner, not McConnell. We put them back in there. We put them all back in there. So whenever, and you know, for those who voted, myself, all those that went to vote, who many of the times we immediately become moralistic. We voted, so it's we are not to blame for the cancer that is Washington because we did our part, but you didn't. It is your fault. Those of us moralizing that way better shut up, because voting, it is not simply enough to vote. Society is us all. And it is our independent individual responsibility, not only for us to go out there and vote, but for us to take our daughters, our wives, our husbands, our grandmothers, our fathers, our grandparents, our friends, who may be at some time demoralized because of the current state of the body politic, instead of moralizing, what we should be all doing is encouraging those who think they have no value in the process to inform them that, in fact, their value is in their vote. Because if all those who thought their vote didn't matter voted, we would have had real middle-class economics long time ago. Long time ago. I discussed much of this on a couple of KPFT Politics Done Right shows a few weeks ago, and I think folks are starting to come around and realize that, in fact, the change is really not going to be some great leader coming along and bringing us or taking us over the mountains, taking us to the promised land. It ain't going to happen like that, folks. That is not how change happens. Change has never happened that way. In fact, I digress to the civil rights and to the state that we're in today. I will contend that one of the reasons a hell of a lot with regards to civil rights still go unanswered, still goes unresolved, is because these movements had charismatic leaders that everybody looked up to. That's not a positive. Martin Luther King was a great, great man. If a movement depends on one great man or a few great men or a few great women or one great woman, a movement, it is not. And that is the one thing I think we need to learn. When we talk about middle-class economics, it's not coming down from the president preaching middle-class economics. Yes, he can put the template out there. But what is going to be required is that the middle class, the poor, demand. And folks, I use the word middle class a whole lot. And every now and then I get slammed on an email. Somebody will send me an email and say, "You're always talking about the middle class. What about me? I am poor. I am working hard. I still have to get food stamps. I don't want food stamps. I don't want these items. I want to do better for myself, but I can't. And all you're talking about is the middle class." When I talk about middle class, folks, I'm talking about everybody else. sometimes I forget to say poor, but I mean poor, because now the middle class is going, I mean, many in the middle class are one step away from being the poor. Many in the middle class are one step, one paycheck away from being the poor. So when I talk about middle class, I'm talking about everybody else. Everybody else. But going back to the leader, going back to when we speak about leadership. Leadership. Charismatic leadership is not necessarily a good thing. I remember back in 2008 when during the election, let me first put myself out here. I was initially a Hillary Clinton supporter back in 2007, 2008, early 2008. I never thought the president had a chance to win. I didn't know too much about the president. I never read his book or anything of that nature. I saw his speech. I thought he gave a great speech at the Democratic Convention. I liked his speech, but speeches do very little for me as far as voting or who I care about or whatever. I looked at Hillary Clinton in the race as a very competent woman and also a woman, and I thought it was high time, and this is not about quotas or anything like that. I thought men have done a great job in screwing up the country, and I think there are, in fact, differences in the way women and men approach things, bravado versus sensibilities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you look across the world at all the countries that have had women in power, and I thought, you know, there is, except for Margaret Thatcher, who tried to man up womanhood, in my opinion, and that I hope doesn't come across as sexist to my female listeners, I think we need to have a plethora of people in the office. But anyway, as I said before, I was once a supporter of Hillary Clinton, and after Bill Clinton made some rather pathetic racial remarks when President Obama beat Hillary in one of the contests, I decided, you know what, if President Clinton said that, how far was Hillary from that? And I jumped ship, then started supporting Obama, became active in his campaign. I remember going to a whole lot of the house parties. And after going to the house parties, I saw people getting excited over the man that scared me. I live in a predominantly white community, and for me it was just sort of it was a bit shocking to see the sort of like the idolatry with which these people, and I'm talking about going to house parties throughout Kingwood, and I mean there were a lot of them. A place that I would not have expected to see these types of house parties. And these people were fanatical about this guy. They were fanatical about President Obama. I mean, then Senator Obama. I was never fanatical about the man. Never fanatical about the man. But anyhow, I then went ahead and saw the, went ahead and we did our block walking and bringing people in or whatever. And I remember sitting down with a friend, and I said, you know what scares me the most? These same people that are so fanatical about this guy will immediately turn on him, because the things that they expect out of this guy, they have been so depressed with what President Bush had given the country over his 8 years or his 7 years then. There is no way this president could live up to the expectation, because he cannot. President is not a king. A president has very little sway, no matter what you hear the talking heads say on TV. A president has very, very little leeway to promote policy without a Congress willing to abide. Very little. And voila, his first year was crunching. We got Obamacare. We got a whole lot of good bills passed. But they were only good bills. They weren't great bills, because he couldn't deliver appropriately, because charisma does not beat plutocracy. Charisma does not beat plutocracy. I see Deb Shepherd, where you talk about Chum chum chum. It's a verb too. I don't exactly know what that means, but you must call in and tell me. Anyhow, before I keep rambling, it seems like I've got a call here, so let me go ahead and bring this caller in. 111, I guess it's a Skype call. How can I help here? What's your name, sir, or ma'am?
Hi, my name is Andrew.
Andrew, how are you doing today?
Oh, well, I've been trying to fight the good fight on Blog Talk Radio and doing all right, I guess. Still got all my arms and legs, so grateful for that. How are you?
All right. Talk to me, Andrew. What would you like to add to the discussion?
Well, I think it's great that you guys are doing a show about economy, because it really is a huge part of society, and a lot of issues stem out of that. You know, I'm really interested to hear more about this middle-class economics. My main thing is I'd like to see people become more aware of the debt-based banking system around the world, because it really is the method by which, empire is being run and wars are waged, etc., in our modern time, the last couple of hundred years, even beyond that. But it really, really got into full swing when the when the networks started rolling out in the corporations. So even the United States is a corporation. And I think the main thing that I'm hoping people become aware of is, for example, a very good example, you had a World Bank lawyer coming out on mainstream television, Corin Hughes, even mentioning the same thing. Since 1871, okay, the United States has an agreement with the Crown Corporation, which is the same Crown Corporation that operates out of Canada, if I'm not mistaken, to send money to the Bank of England for the Crown through the Federal Reserve, which is also a privately owned bank. So what people are essentially doing is, like, when you pay your Social Security, there's a huge chunk of that that's going back to the royal family and various other groups, and that as one example of how debt-based banking systems can be manipulated, and how, it's not just about Obama, it's not about any of the senators, because they're actually all working inside of the United States Corporation. It sounds crazy, but you have a World Bank lawyer who is trying to get the word out on how currency works, who was with the World Bank for decades, who's based out of the United States, Corin Hughes, going on mainstream television and saying this. You don't get a lawyer who works for the World Bank saying this without there being some truth to it. So, my question to you would be, how does your economic model or middle-class economics fit into a system such as that, or is it entirely separate? Because I'd like to see people go on to a kind of Lincoln's greenback, but like state by state, so that it's not centralized and it can't be taken out so easily.
Now, I mean, let me qualify something. First of all, I'm not an expert on banking. I will first state that categorically. But that said, I wrote a paper a few years ago, on what I thought middle class economics would be. I didn't call it middle class economics, as the president is calling, but on how things operate. And the reality is, the least of my concerns was really debt. And the reason I'm saying the least of my concerns was debt, not that it isn't important, because you are correct that in fact we're debt-based economy, as Richard,
there's a few people that have put it out.
Yeah, but which economist am I talking about? Richard, anyway, I'll remember his name as I speak. But he gave an illustration where he showed that that Richard Wolff, that's his name, Richard Wolff. And what he showed is that our economy, our debt-based economy, was by design a form of extracting wealth from the middle class in the way the entire system operated. In effect, as opposed to receiving increases in salaries, folks were given increases in credit lines. So everybody during the 90s had the semblance of prosperity because they had a credit line. And what occurred up until 2007? Well, the cards really started to fall. Why did the cards fall? Because their credit limit, they reached the limit that credit could be extended based on the way our system is designed. That said, we have to remember that this is all a man-made system, right? Theoretically speaking, absent the plutocracy, the rich folk, we could say we're going to have a stop, a set stop now, blank, zero. Eliminate all debt around the world, period, and reset. Think about this, Andrew. Theoretically speaking, we could do an absolute reset on the economy. I'll be honest with you, I thought in 2008 we were approaching something like that that was going to occur. Of course, the bankers came in, they controlled the argument, and that was not allowed. But theoretically speaking, we could set stop. Now, what changes if all debt is eliminated? I want to ask you that. If we went ahead and say, everybody that is owed something, sorry, you know, that was a society that we had before, now all debt is zero. Tell me what exactly happened to society. What has actually changed by just that numerical analysis?
Well, I think for starters, I think we have to start understanding that it's incredibly complex. I mean, I'm not a banker either in terms of like high-level banking. But, you know, there are systems that can be put in place. And if you look at something like Bitcoin, now I'm not saying Bitcoin is reliable, I'm not saying it's the best, but it's an open source platform. So you can take Bitcoin yourself in your community, the software that runs Bitcoin, and create your own service amongst communities and have a separate network from the Bitcoin network where you guys attach assets to that. You could use gold or silver, or you could use even livestock. And then you have a commodity backing for your currency. And then you can start trading amongst each other. And that's exactly what Abraham Lincoln did when he printed his greenbacks. Now, he had the backing of the American people. The American people's goodwill to back that currency and use that currency was the value attached to the greenback. But the whole point of it was very successful. People started realizing, hey, we can easily facilitate trade. This is great. There was no artificial manipulation, as you just mentioned, of the currency. And that's when, you see, when you have something called fractional reserve banking, what it's doing is the reserve bank lends out more money than they actually have in gold reserves. So they're creating debt. So your debt to pay them becomes their money to lend. And they're allowed to lend out nine times. It sounds complicated. It's actually just a big magic trick. It's a sleight of hand card trick. But
yeah.
So basically they're lending out. They're lending out more and more and more money that they never really had in the first place, which is essentially like if you think about thinking way back into biblical times, the story of Jesus chucking the money changers out of the temple. Why were they chucked out of the temple? Well, they were using, if I'm not mistaken, they were actually ripping the people off because they had to pay the temple tax with the half shekel of silver. It's a very important principle because they cornered the market on the half shekel of silver, which was the only coin that didn't have the head of a Roman emperor on it. Hence the famous scripture that said, you know, they tried to catch up Jesus and they said, well, should we pay taxes? And Jesus held up that coin and said, well, whose head is on this coin? They say, and then he said, pay taxes to Caesar, what is owed to Caesar,
render unto Caesar
and pay unto God. Yeah, give unto God. Now, I think what he was maybe alluding to there was, guys, don't use Caesar's money system if you don't want to pay Caesar, which people tend to forget, right? They think, oh, yeah, no, but we should obey because Jesus said, no, there's a whole other story going on, perhaps. Maybe what he was really saying was, guys, use your own, drink running water out of your own cistern, you know, get your own solar panels. You know, so essentially,
I love the way you said you know, that, Andrew.
Okay, I'm glad. I'm glad it made some sense because I was kind of trying to, you know, just use an analogy, a little story, allegory, because this is the crux of how easy it would be to get out of the system. You turn your back on that Fed and you get your state, even on your local town level, etc. If you can network 1,000 towns in the United States, you will have unbelievable buying power if you can move back onto the gold standard through a Bitcoin decentralized network. So that's what
you
people
know,
should actually be focusing.
There is actually a young a guy that used to call into the show, wrote a paper, and he is trying to do exactly what you just mentioned. But stay with me, John.
Wow.
I mean, Andrew, and do me a favor because I think sometimes we're getting some feedback. One of our listeners said I think they're getting some feedback from your phone. I want to keep your mic hot, so if you can somehow mitigate that for me, that would be good. I'm going to bring in Debt Shepherd now. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. This is Greg calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
How are you doing, Greg?
A great conversation. It needs to be had more often, and this just happens to be the thing that I've studied the most. I'm still actually in banking here in the U.S. I've been in banking for about 15 years now, and I've kind of come full circle. It really gets down to looking behind what it is that we physically see. And I'll share with you very quickly the deepest lesson about money that has ever been given to me by someone who...
Well, I am glad, sir, I'm glad to hear from you and take the time that you need, because this would be educational not only for me, but for the audience as well. So please go ahead.
Yeah, the what we do is when someone has knowledge that we don't have and they're willing to share it with us, they basically act as a bridge for us. They span that gap between one shore of consciousness and the other. So this person just stepped in the gap and said, I will be the bridge, only because I was willing to listen. So here's the wisdom. It brought me to this. Why do they call it a bank? This place that you go, the federal bank, as the gentleman said, it is not a bank. It's a for-profit corporation that's been known for, I would say probably it's been coming into the mass consciousness probably for the last, I don't know, 20 years, I'm guessing. But let's keep it simple. Why do they call this place a bank? This place that you go to borrow this money to get what you want, the house, the car, the college education, whatever. And it's really, really simple. You have to think of a riverbank. Now, what does a riverbank have to do with a bank? Look in your mind, picture in your mind a riverbank. You're sitting on the bank. The grass is beautiful. The weather is wonderful. There's a breeze. And you're just looking at this river. Think of the last time you sat on the bank of a river, if you ever have. This is why they call it a bank. Because the bank of the river controls the flow of the current. And the word current means currency. So what that bank that river bank, is it controls and directs the flow of the current. And that is why they call it a bank, because a bank controls and directs the flow of the currency. Now, that's a pretty simple teaching, but what we're really talking about here is the harnessing of human energy. These people who own these banks, i.e. the Federal Reserve Bank, a for-profit corporation, it has nothing to do with the United States of America, which, as the gentleman spoke earlier, is nothing but a for-profit corporation. Okay? We have been convinced that the place for us to go to get our energy or our power are these buildings with four walls. And back in the old days, what they would do for visual effect is they would build these banks with concrete and stone and all of these really heavy, heavy materials. And that would give you the feeling of stability. So when you went in there, you had confidence in this false representation of what's really your human energy. So what we're really doing when we borrow money from these people is simply this. I'll use another analogy, parenthetically inserted into the first one. I walk up to you, dear show host, and I say, that is a really nice pair of shoes you got on there. Those are some amazing shoes. Where'd you get them? You say, oh, I picked them up last week. Let's just say they're brown. Best pair of shoes I've ever seen. And I say, what'd you get for them? You say, I paid $20 for them, and you own those shoes. And I'm so smart, and I'm so slick, and there's a few things maybe you don't know. When we're done talking, I actually convince you to rent your shoes from me. And every month, you send me a check. And you rent from me the pair of shoes that you already own. That's what we do when we borrow money from a bank. Any comments?
I mean, that is profound. Now, explain to people exactly what you mean when you say we already own that money when we borrow the money from the bank.
I'll have to give you the Cliff Notes version. You could talk about this for weeks. There are some teachings that simply say everything that you've ever borrowed money to get, the house, the car, the student loan, the whatever, has already been prepaid, meaning you already own it. That's a very, very vast subject. I think we could make it as simple as possible by simply saying this. If we went back to ground zero, or we went back to the beginning, whatever that is for you, I mean, we could say, okay, today is 2015. Let's just reverse all of this when all of this started, whether it's creation for you, whether it's Big Bang, it doesn't really matter. No one owned anything. So the whole question we need to be asking is, why do people own anything? right? Why is it that someone owns the money? Why is it that someone owns the land? Why is it that someone owns the building? The whole idea of ownership is the reason why we're in this mess that we're in, because the people that are controlling this banking system, they know some things that most of the people in the world don't know, and they're simply convincing us that to get what we need to go through them first. Now, this has a very similar flavor to a thing called religion. You must pass through the priest to speak to God. The priest is the middleman. That's what the bank is. They call it the temple. All of these analogies span culture, color, geography, age, everything. It doesn't matter where you live. In a spiritual sense, it doesn't matter where you live. But in a 3D world sense, it certainly doesn't matter. Why? Because petroleum, which is fossil fuel, is traded in U.S. dollars. And if you have to exchange your currency into U.S. dollars in order to buy oil. And that's how we get our food, everything it is that we want in this world, in this existing time. So what I'm saying is all of the inflation that the United States creates because of its excess, because of its corruption, and the corruption's everywhere. It isn't just in the U.S. What we do, because oil is pegged to the dollar, is we export our inflation. We export our laziness in the area of finance. So it doesn't matter if you run to Australia. It doesn't matter if you run to Venezuela and go, I'm going to go live on an island somewhere. Screw these people. No, it's all exported. It's a disease is what it is.
Now, let me ask you, Greg, and Jack, I'm coming to you next, so be prepared with your question, my dear friend. Greg, what kind of banking are you into or were you into?
I got into basically residential mortgage lending in 2000. I'm still in that business. And let me just explain to you what this means. It's very simple. And it took me, nearly 15 years in the business to understand what it is that we truly do. Minus all of the Wall Street crap that you hear, this is what banking is. In residential lending, this is what we do. We create and then sell debt contracts. That's it. There's no other way to explain what it is that we do. We create and then sell debt contracts. That's what we do.
That is so true. I mean, in fact, my mortgage right now, after I've refinanced it with, let's say, Bank of America is who I had it with, probably has been sold two or three different times.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed.
I went through a spell in my teaching where I was completely against debt. You know, it's the plague. Debt's not going to go anywhere, I don't think, anytime soon. So I had to really tone my message down and just say, look, if we're going to do this, let's do it with a level of awareness. Let's do it with as much wisdom as humanly possible. And if we're going to play the game, and banking is really truly, I don't mean metaphorically, it is truly a game. If we're going to play the game, let's play it for the shortest period of time possible, get what we want, and get out of the game as quickly as possible. Because what we typically do, at least here in the U.S., I can only speak from my experience, is we stay in the debt cycle. We finance it, we pay it off, we charge it up, we pay it down, and we do that all of our lives. You can get what you want by borrowing money. I'm not saying that these banks are, you know, the people in a bank, a loan officer, even the manager, they're not evil people. They're not at the top of the food chain. They're just there to make a living like you are.
Exactly. Hey, look, Greg, there are folks that want to get in touch with you. And actually, I would like to get some, we have here at Coffee Party USA, .com. We have what we call our newsroom, where we are trying to get quite a bit of original material that isn't necessarily covered by the mainstream media or the what we call the traditional media. So what we are looking for are original writers, original bloggers, etc., etc. I personally would like to get in touch with you and do some talking with you to see if there's some sort of a synergy there. How can I reach you, or if I give you my email address, which I've done, would you contact me if you don't want to say it on air?
No. I typically, when I call in, I don't self-promote. I'm here to just contribute. But only if I'm asked, what I'll do is I'll put in the name of my my blog, which is there in the chat screen right now. And if you go over there, you can find my email very simply by just looking at Contact Us. There are no gatekeepers. I don't have a secretary. I'm just a normal person. My wife and I, we have a dog. She was a banker for many years. Her mother retired as a banker. Her grandfather was a small town farm, raised horses, owned a small town bank. For whatever reason that is, I don't know. I don't ask those questions. It's just what I gravitated to. And the thing this is such an amazing topic, because when we think we're talking about banking and we really think about we're talking about politics, which are good things to talk about, we're actually talking about giving away our power, and people that have a level of wisdom that they know how to harness other people's energy. And I'll just use this as an example. And I am not steering this conversation into a different direction. I'm going to use this as a quick example. In the United States, there was a thing known as human slavery. It has been a blight on the consciousness of this country for decades. It'll probably never go away. But what happened was one group of people harnessed the human energy of another group of people, and it's the worst thing that you can do. It's absolutely the worst way that you can live, no matter what side of that equation you're on, because what you're doing is you're taking the incredible human potential that people exist and you're crushing it down into dirt, and you're absolutely demeaning it. And when you do that to someone long enough, you absolutely will pay the consequences, and it's going to come out in a million different ugly ways, whether it be political backlash, economic backlash, spiritual backlash. You can call it karma, whatever it is that you want. But the whole thing about money is we just need to understand, pay off what you do have. This would be my advice. Pay off what you do have and just stop borrowing more. You know, get your house. You can pay it off in 5 to 7 years with 10% of your take-home pay, a dime out of every dollar. You can pay off everything and just quit playing the game.
Excellent, excellent. I like what you have to say, and a lot of people, I think, would take heed to that. So, Greg, let me go to Jack. I'm leaving you hot. Before I bring Jack in, let me just see if Andrew has anything else he wanted to add.
Guys, I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the line there with that info. It was really great to hear it from someone that's been in the industry for such a long time. And, when you said human potential there, that's exactly it, man. It just gets me down so many days out of the year when I think about all of the human potential that's being crushed. And like where I live, you know, 1 in 4 people are either malnourished or starving because of the system. And I mean, when you think about the fact that the world produces, I'm in Africa. I'm not going to give exact locations, but I mean, Africa as a whole is just, some of the countries are even worse than where I am at. So, it really is on my heart, you know, because there's some guys that want to do banking, and I've been trying to figure out how to get it going. There's like a whole lot of alt money payment systems that could be put in place in terms of just, you know, I don't want to upset the whole apple cart, and that's why I'd like to speak a little bit more with the previous caller, because I'd like to get his opinions on, you know, how do we transition to a kind of a hybrid economy where, you know, we're not upsetting the whole apple cart, because you saw what happened in with Gaddafi, for example, and when he wanted to bring in his gold standard, he immediately got taken out. There was an excuse made for war. I'm not saying I agree with everything that Gaddafi was doing or all of his methods, but ultimately, if you look at the quality of life that the people had before the invasion, and you look at how the country looks now after the rebels have done their work. It's really sad. I mean, those people, I think it was something ridiculous, like 100,000 units of whatever his currency was, he would give away to anybody that was just starting out in life. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they had free university, open university, just like in Israel, and et cetera. And then they took the guy out because of some excuses that were made. All these things that happen in politics, I don't know the exact story, but you know, you can just see from the way that the town and the cities used to look like compared to now, how that country's been totally trashed.
Andrew, you're sorry, go ahead. I need to get Jack in. You're absolutely correct. However, I mean, that is what we do. I mean, if somebody, you know, we don't want to see a place where a utopia, I mean, I don't want to say utopia, but a place where somehow it goes against the tenets that we have of our democracy that we've got here. And I hate to put it that way, but in a lot of ways, whenever people find themselves doing something positive, we sort of have a way to undermine it, because only positive, our positive can only come from us, and positive can only go through what Greg would call our banking system. What I call it is go through our oligarchy. But anyhow, Jack, how are you doing today?
Okay, fine. Now, I was going to propose some policy, but I want to go and promote my book, Green Power.
All right. Talk to me about your book.
Okay. Now, this, in short form, power is a planet, okay, planet counting, which is 12 and a half light years from Earth, is, if we survive, we come to that. It'll be very intelligent people. We have a lot of other people on Earth like Krypton, not Krypton. It's called Iridium. It's people can fly. Use your imagination. But okay, money would be. And that planet counting, money is outmoded. The system we use is barter. In other words, you trade a service for a product for a service. I think we do about much of that here on Earth.
Jack, I want to stop you a second.
Money be outmoded, and let's see what else. Cars would be outmoded because people can use helicopters or something helicopter-like pieces that go from place to place. Cars would be outmoded, money would be outmoded,
the way to solve our
whole damn problem is to go face to face. I've been emphasizing that for years. I don't think
Jack, where can folks get your book?
What?
Where can people get your book?
Well, I'm trying to get my got a summary, but it's not published. I'm trying to get the nation. My granddaughter can be typing up has typed up a synopsis. I mean, a
I got
preface
it. Well,
to this
I
book.
Tell you what I need, because we're pressed for time a little bit here, Jack. So let me ask you to do me a favor. Get your synopsis together and let us see what you're talking about. But do you want to add anything now to what Greg or Andrew had to say about banking, real quickly?
I didn't think it was going to go in that direction. I had proposals, for example, to get rid of carried interest for
that
people
is a better proposal,
over $250,000 a year. Reform the tax system so that poor people weren't earning, particularly elderly people earning under $20,000 don't have to pay any income tax, and making my four levels up to $250,000, and then from there maybe you tax up to 50% for those earning over $1 billion. That's only the maximum tax. Now back in Eisenhower's time, I think the tax was 90%, the maximum rate.
Right. We're past that. Jack, yeah. I got to go.
Yeah.
I got to go, but here's the deal, Jack. Send the information. You know how to reach me. And we'll talk later. I'll use that as your closing statement, and I'll ask Andrew and Greg to give us a quick closer here.
Okay.
So, Andrew, go ahead and give me a quick closer, my friend. Andrew?
Hi,
okay,
sorry.
I think we lost. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, you know, one of the most inspirational things that's happened in the last few years has got to be the Icelandic Revolution. You know, and there was one of the leaders. He's got a video on YouTube. I can't remember the guy's name, but, you know, he was saying, never give up. Never give up. Never, never, ever give up. There is hope, you know, and I was so inspired by that. So I just want to repeat that message, you know, one of the leaders of the Icelandic Revolution that kicked the bankers out. I mean, I'm not against banking or facilitating trade, but, you know, the way that things are going right now with like one in four people starving in you know, and just so many people that are down and out and so forth in different
Absolutely.
Countries. Yeah, man, like let's like never give up, guys. That's
Absolutely.
My final
I agree
message.
With
Thanks
that.
So much for having
And
me.
Let me tell you, Iceland was great news when they did that. And I think we had a little bit this week with I think it was late last week when Greece decided to kick the bombs out and go to the direction of getting rid of austerity. So, I mean, I think people are waking up, and I think the powers that be better be careful because there are more of us than there are them. So, thank you, my friend. Greg.
Thank you.
Give me a quick closer.
Well, first of all, I'll give you a funny. It's amazing he mentioned Iceland. Today I bought a six-pack of beer that came from Iceland. First time I've ever done that. I just thought that was funny. Like, they make beer in Iceland. Pretty cool. Synopsis is simply this. Voting is not going to solve this problem. It doesn't matter whether it's Obama, Hillary, black, white, green, Indian, American. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. That is nothing but substance. We have been trapped in the physical flesh for centuries as a species. And the bottom line is simply this. It doesn't matter what we're traveling in. It doesn't matter how we're trading. And I did this for years. I was mad at the government. I was trying to figure out how to fix this thing. You can't reform corruption. You can't reform a banking system that is thoroughly corrupt from its foundation, meaning when they dug the foundation and they laid the concrete and the rebar, it was laid on corrupt soil to begin with. You can't just scrape half of that off and then build back onto it because the remaining corruption will infect the rest of the structure. So what you have to do is you have to simply say, how are we going, we being me? And when you say we, you, dear listener, when you say they, you're talking about you. This is an inside job. And I'm not getting flowery spiritual here. Nothing's going to change until you change and shift your consciousness. And this applies to me because I'm still working on this. If I had solved all this, I wouldn't be here because I'd be done coming back through this school that they call it, this learning process.
Now, Greg, so right. I agree with you. And in fact, I think I try to let everybody, when I'm saying you, I always try to use our we. Because it's we who have to solve this problem. Thank you very much for calling, my friend. Folks, you have been listening to Politics Done Right. I'm Egberto Willis, your host. Look, folks, we had some great guests with some information that we should be thinking about. We should be thinking about these things. Please, folks, go to coffeepartyusa.com. Become a member. Join us. And also remember, this is our five-year anniversary. Go ahead and click that button and drop $5, $10. Become a member for, I think our membership is, I don't remember what our membership amount is. That's a shame, but I don't. But go ahead and join us. What we do here is we promote the middle class. We promote America, and we are a part of the change that we need to make. What you heard Greg speak about, what you heard Andrew speak about, who are going to make that change. And it starts from the grassroots, not from the top down, bottom up. You hear that a whole lot, but we really mean that. We all have to activate individually. Again, thank you for giving me this hour. I know your time is cherished. You have a wonderful rest of the weekend. Enjoy your day. Politics Done Right. Coffee Party out. Please go to Coffee Party USA.com. C'est la vie. Peace.